everyone. Welcome to episode 133 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Chris Pachko and Angie Han.
Hey, everybody.
Hello.
Alrighty, so here we go. The hot topic for the week is going to be a little news we heard about monster trucks, and then after that, we're going to roll into our big review, which is going to be of Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. First up, though, monster trucks. Angie, do you want to introduce that one?
I do. So we were trying to figure out, well, you know, what do we want to do for a hot topic this week? And I said, my favorite headline that I read this week was that Paramount is taking a $115 million write down on Monster Trucks, a movie that isn't even out yet. But the best part of this story is that it is based on an idea that came out of conversations at a Paramount executive had with his then 4-year-old son. And this whole thing just seems, this whole thing is just so crazy for me. I remember hearing about Monster Trucks for the first time like years ago. It's a movie that was supposed to come out in 2015. Perry even visited the set, if I'm not mistaken.
I did, in the and summer of 2014, so it's been quite a while.
Yeah, it's been delayed again and again and again, and now it's slated to open in January. And, you know, like, lately we've seen some films that, like, have done really well in January, and, like, people are like, oh, January is no longer the dumping ground it used to be. Yeah, no, this isn't that. This is one of those, like, dumping ground January movies. So the concept of Monster Trucks is radically simple. It is about monster trucks, as in monsters who live in trucks, one of whom befriends Lucas Till, last seen playing a middle-aged man in X-Men Apocalypse, but here he's a teenager, and now he's MacGyver. Oh
guys,
my god,
that's
guys,
just
I can't,
acting.
I can't.
Come on. He is a thespian who can shift his age depending on the project, and when it comes to a movie designed by a 4-year-old about monster trucks, which I want to point out that when that trailer came out, Angie, you and I texted each other about a million times, because that trailer, it is exactly the kind of stupid movie I want to watch in January.
Yeah, I was going to say, stop hating. This thing looks like I think it looks like fun. I was on the set. I don't mean it looks like fun as in it looks like a fun quality family movie. I mean that thing looks like stupid fun with a blob monster that drives a truck. And that's kind of how I felt after the set visit too. We went on the set visit in June of 2014, and I will say it was probably one of the best set visits I've ever been on, just because it's actually a lot of fun going on a set visit when you know nothing about a movie at all. So it was just really interesting to hear about, you know, the property and the monster and how they were going to incorporate, I don't know, not like it's some big grand idea with all this lore behind it, but it was just nice to see a completely original property and what they were doing with it, and it just seemed like a lot of fun at the time. But I will say, even on the set, I felt like the make-or-break thing was the design of the creature, and based on what I saw in that trailer, the creature looks a little too cartoonish.
I would just like to be very, very clear that I am not hating on Monster Trucks. I am so excited about this movie. I'm not even kidding. I cannot wait to see
Angie's
it. It's
probably Angie's most tweeted about movie of 2016, even though it's not coming out until 2017.
But I've Angie, been talking for people about this that movie don't know, so much.
Can you break down what a write down is?
Well, it says right here, it is basically that's how much money they're expecting to lose on this movie. And that's not too surprising considering, so here's the thing, like, I'm not kidding when I say I'm really looking forward to this movie. I thought the trailer looked, as Perry said, stupid, but, like, really fun. And, like, you know, when's the last time you saw a movie about monsters and trucks? We're always like, Hollywood should have more original ideas. Well, here's one, a monster that is a truck.
Yeah, you asked for this, everybody.
But here's the thing, like, when you look at, like, they're expecting to lose $115 million on this movie, which is an unusual thing for them to announce at this point, because the movie's not even out yet. So the fact that they're already, like, saying, you know, telling investors we're going to lose this money is, like, just a sign that they have no confidence in it. And then you're just like, and then you look at what the budget was, which is $125 million, and you're just like, but, like, why? Like, why did this thing cost $125 million?
The plan was for this to kind of start a major franchise for them, a major family-friendly thing. So I understand why they would have put all that money in it to begin with. It's just unfortunate the way things panned out. But I'm surprised we don't hear stories like this more often, because I would imagine that studios out there that spent a lot of money on big productions have been in the situation where they don't think it's going to do well and have to inform investors at these meetings. So, I don't know. I just wonder what the big deal is with monster trucks to make them have presented it this way, for us to be covering it this way, and why this hasn't happened with previous releases.
I have a crazy conspiracy theory, because it is the
Let's
season for that.
It what doesn't involve if, monsters and trucks?
It does. What if they purposely release this story so that people like us would talk about it, and then goofballs who are like, that movie sounds hilarious and bonkers, I do want to see that bad movie in theaters, purposely seek it out.
I hate like, that conspiracy theory, just because I don't want to be manipulated like that, but... you know, there could be some truth to something like that. I don't think it would save
the movie. Like, I don't, you know, if this movie seriously costs $125 million, they're not making that back. But, like, their complaint, if I remember correctly, was that they were trying to make it a broad family movie, and they realized what they got back was much too kiddie to have that kind of appeal. But what if you get children to go, and then also idiots that like to go late-night movies, perhaps sneaking in flasks of vodka?
I wouldn't sneak in flask of vodka. It would definitely be bourbon. What is wrong with you?
You're right. Basically, I'm saying this is the kind of movie idiots like us would go see gladly. Probably.
I think that's pretty accurate.
Even if it's bad, I admire how bonkers this is.
That's what really appealed to me about it, and like what kind of and that's why I'm kind of bummed that it costs so much to make, because this is actually like, I'm not even kidding, this is the kind of stuff that like, yeah, it's kind of great that they're taking risks on this crazy idea. Sure, it's ridiculous that it came out of a conversation with a four-year-old, but like that's part of it's like, you know, if it's a success, that's part of its zany origin story. And I just think like, you know, if Hollywood were less committed to only making really giant films or really small films, this could have been like a solid, like, you know, small to mid-budget performer.
It's a good point.
All right, so even though that movie is shaping up to be a bit of a, I guess, a box office bomb for the studio, we're still looking forward to it, so that's got to mean something.
Keep now your head up, Lucas Till.
I'm sure. Hopefully MacGyver pans out for the poor kid. So now let's move on to our big review of the week, which is of Tim Burton's latest, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. Here is the IMDb synopsis. When Jacob discovers clues to a mystery that spans different worlds and times, he finds Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. But the mystery and danger deepens as he gets to know the residents and learns about their special powers. Yeah, you get like a C for that one, IMDb. spelling errors, and they miss so much of the main plot of the movie. But anyway, this is Tim Burton's latest. I am a big fan of Tim Burton, more so with his older work, the stuff that made him, you know, the filmmaker he is today, like Beetlejuice and stuff like that. And I see a lot of Beetlejuice in Miss Peregrine, just in terms of having that mix of dark scenarios and characters, and also those crazy, kooky type of situations. And I'm not going to say this is a great movie. It does feel rushed, like they had a wealth of source material to use, and it's a pretty complicated world with a lot of rules and a lot of characters, but I think that Tim Burton did a good enough job presenting all these characters in a likable manner and making me feel at home in Miss Peregrine's house, and also Eva Green's wonderful. But I think I liked the characters and I enjoyed being in the world enough that I kind of overlooked a couple of things that weren't really working for me, and I had enough fun with the movie overall, and I'm about to be disagreed with hardcore.
You're coming at this from a crouch defensive position already. Like the whole thing was like,
it's because you guys were kind of priming me for it.
Well, because we said ahead of time we didn't like this movie. I gotta say, so okay, this is based on a book by Ransom Riggs, and I read that novel, and it reads like someone's pitching a movie. The story doesn't make a lot of sense, and like the characters are kind of haphazard, and it feels like it's more filled with cool imagery at the idea of like, no, don't pay attention to that, we'll figure that out later. Look at this, a girl that floats. Like, and the thing that I have a problem with in this movie is it also feels like that.
Like a movie pitch? A movie that feels like a movie pitch,
it doesn't feel fleshed out, because like the characters, I don't feel anything for most of them, because like the boy, Jake, what are his characteristics? Like, he has no personality, and most of the kids of the peculiar children have no personality. Like, the girl he likes is sweet, the boy who's mean to him is mean, and everybody else just is like, oh, Jake, stay around forever! And like, why? He's not interesting, he's not funny, his one talent is like,
Because they don't really get very much visitors, and they live in that time loop together forever. It's only natural for them to see a new person there and want him to be part of the family too.
But that's what I'm saying. It's completely about the function he serves in the plot, rather than him having actually any kind of charisma. And I don't mean that as a slam against Asa Butterfield necessarily. I liked him in Ender's Game, but in this, he just has nothing going on. It's so paper thin.
I can't really defend that point, because I will admit he serves his purpose in the movie, but there isn't anything all that special about him beyond the fact that he is peculiar. Is his way of being peculiar a spoiler?
Yes.
No. Oh, okay. Yes? Sure. Yes. I guess, fine, it's a spoiler. No, it's true. You know how I know it's a spoiler? Okay, so here's one of my big problems with this movie. This movie is like 70% exposition. Literally the first half of the movie is just setting up the universe, setting up the characters, setting up like the different rules that like guide this universe, setting up the mythology. Like I looked at my watch at one point and like it was an hour into the movie, literally an hour into the movie, and characters were still explaining to the main character how he fits into like this entire storyline, like what his role is
length.
In this
There's
plot.
Like
yeah.
monologues explaining how this movie
and
works.
And then like so and it's when it's yet another one of the movies we've gotten that's like all exposition and then just moves straight into the climax with like no real room for character development. And then even in the third act, they're still explaining the fucking story. Like the villain gets like one of, you know, the villain gets a villainous monologue, and guess what, the monologue is him recapping everything that he's done so far, which we've already covered extensively in other expository conversations that other characters have had. Like, it's so weird. And the thing is, like, I do agree with Perry that there are flashes of this movie that did remind me of old school Tim Burton. Like, there's a, I don't want to give away too many details, but there's a third act sequence that I found was kind of charming, just because it was, like, so weird and so Tim Burton-y and so, like, what is happening? What are these monsters? Totally. What's going on? And I thought that was charming. I was like, kudos, Miss Peregrine. You did not open up another fucking portal over New York City, so you already, you know, get a plus in my book for that. And, you know, so there are little moments like that, but overall this whole thing just feels so, like, it feels like Christy said, like, it just feels like they're setting things up without, like, actually giving any thought into, you know, anything. Like, one of the things that drove me nuts is, like, so you set up this interesting universe with these, like, crazy rules, and, like, one of the rules is that they live in, like, these people live in a time loop. And I was like, okay, so does the movie ever explain, for example, like, there's a five-year-old kid who remembers, like, things that happened decades ago. So, like, but she still, like, looks like a five-year-old, which makes sense, but she also seems to act and think like a five-year-old. Like, this kind of stuff, like, nobody ever brings up. So, like, they're, like, too busy explaining all this really intricate mythology to even delve into, like, the really obvious questions that this kind of universe raises.
That's a very fair point. I actually didn't have a problem with them acting like children, but one of my biggest problems with the movie overall was that the whole idea of a time loop seems kind of stupid. I don't really get why a time loop makes them safe, especially a time loop created on a day during World War II.
Yeah, it seems like that time loop was created really last minute, and so that's why that one's kind of fucked. But I agree with you. Like, I don't think that – I think that's what Angie's saying, though, is that there are these interesting ideas about the idea of the peculiar children being safe within these time loops. But then, one – how are they safe within these time loops? Two, do they age, like, mentally at all within the time loops? Three, if they never age or never grow up and stay in the time loops forever, how are like, peculiar genes being passed down? Because presumably they don't come of age and have children. It, like, doesn't make any fucking sense if you think about
like
it for more than a couple minutes.
There's, like, a five-year-old girl there who's, you know, presumably had the life experience of, like, 70 years. And you're just like, wait, so, like, what?
And then she,
like,
falls in love with a 15-year-old because fuck us, right?
Yeah, just, like, it has so many, it has so many little things like that where you're like, wait, so then, like, where did these people come from? Like, where are their families? Are they all peculiars? How do they have families if none of them ever grow up to reproduce? If some of them do grow up old enough to reproduce, then, like, what is the benefit of staying in this fucking time loop forever? Like, none of this is answered.
I cannot deny any of that, but that's where the benefit of, this sounds like such a cop-out because, you know, pretty visuals don't make a good movie, but that is kind of where the pretty visuals, the charming characters, the pace of the movie.
Time out. Charming characters how, though? I mean, okay, but one second.
I liked them. I've... I very much liked all the children in the house. I liked the fact that I knew that I think they look cool. I like the fact that I knew what each one of them was capable of. I think I got a decent sense of who they were within this family.
I knew their powers,
and where they
maybe.
Fit and what their dynamics were.
Oh, I feel like they're defined by just their abilities and absolutely nothing else. And I feel like that's such a big problem because, like, I mean, you know, there is precedent for movies like this, like Harry Potter or, like, you know, the good X-Men movies and stuff like that. But the thing that they do is they make you care about the individual characters. And, like, you know, I'm not trying to tell you, oh, Perry, you're wrong, you didn't care. But, like, I'm saying I personally just couldn't. And to me, that was why this movie fell flat, despite it having some interesting ideas.
Yeah, I was actually just really bothered because the problems I have with the book are not at all mended in this. Though they give it a flashier finale, which I'll give them partial credit for that. But, like, I was mostly bored because so much of this movie is spent on the love story between Jake and what's-her-face. Not Olive, that's her name in the book. Emma. Like, they're supposedly in love, but, like, no attention is spent building that, like, development. It's just like, oh, hello, Jake. Oh, hi, Emma. Ooh. And it's just like, it's a bunch of fucking moaning. And then it's like, oh, also now the plot has to kick into gear. But let's jump into spoilers because I don't, you know, I mean, basically, if you want to watch Degrassi on mute, you can, that's what that section of the movie is like.
Oh, wow. No, that's way harsh. I actually kind of was okay with how they did that because it wasn't necessarily beating me over the head with schmaltzy behavior and comments, but, you know, I got the point of how they felt about each other without anyone outright saying it. I don't know. I just felt the time that they spent together was pretty, you know, well woven into the story where I wasn't being too beaten over the head.
Oh, God, I wanted to take a nap. I was so bored. Let's move into third act spoilers. Yeah. So, Perry, you want to jump in?
One of the things that I would have liked more, which I think has a lot to do with what happens in the third act, is I wanted to see Eva Green be more of a badass in the movie. She does kind of give up and disappear, and, you know, my producing brain kicks in, and I'm like, oh, well, they scheduled Eva Green for 2/3 of this movie, and then they lost her, so let's make her a bird for the rest of it. But I will say I liked crazy Samuel L. Jackson as the villain Baron quite a bit because, you know, that villain needed a little bit of beefing up. It's definitely a whole bunch of Samuel L. Jackson hamming it up to the max, but he has so much fun with it. He is so, like, him to me is a great example of a fun Tim Burton-esque villain, and I had a lot of fun with that character. I also really liked the monsters in the movie, and I liked the fact that
the fake Slender, the off-brand Slenderman,
the Slenderman.
Those monsters.
Well, you know what they reminded me of? Did either of you see any of the concept art that was done for The Conjuring 2's The Crooked Man?
No.
I thought it had a very similar design to that, but I did like the way they looked. I thought they were pretty damn creepy, and I thought the fact that they stole eyes and they went with that was really ballsy, and it's got a really effect to it to see somebody without their eyes like that.
I agree with you. Like, I liked, to some extent, like, I really liked Eva Green. Eva Green is one of those actresses that I feel like is, like, so reliably the best part of bad movies. Like, she was the best part of Sin City, A Dame to Kill For. She was the best part of the 300 sequel. Like, you know, she can make hay out of even, like, the shittiest roles, but, like, oh my god, like, why not let her be the best part of a good movie for once? Like, I think she did great work, but I also think that she deserves better. Oh yeah, no, I should also mention Dark Shadows here, her other movie with Tim Burton, where she was also the best part of a bad movie. And Samuel Jackson, like, yeah, he has a lot of fun hamming it up, and the best scene in this movie is just the two of them facing off and having a conversation, and, like, with these two, like, you know, just, like, showy powerhouse performers going up against each other. Like, that itself was fun. The rest of the movie, unfortunately, I didn't think had that same magic.
I totally agree. And the thing with Eva Green is that, like, Perry sets up, and it's a very good point, she presents Miss Peregrine as this really on top of it powerhouse of, like, you know, I mean, she protects these children no matter what. And then the third act takes her completely out of the equation. Like, it's incredibly stupid. It's just that structurally it makes no fucking sense. I do like Samuel L. Jackson, but I have to warn Samuel L. Jackson fans, he's only in the last third of the movie. And he is really good. I don't know that I would say he's a typical Burton villain. He kind of feels like he's doing his own Samuel L. Jackson thing. And I'm not mad at it. He's wearing, like, the wig from Batman Returns that that Christopher Walken had going on. And he's being super weird. And he's yelling a lot. And it was fun. Like, the two of them made the movie fun. But by contrast, it also just shows how lifeless the rest of the performances are.
And I also found Chris O'Dowd pretty disappointing.
Oh, you know, his American accent is the worst thing I've ever heard. Yeah.
As much fun as I had with this movie, I think probably the parts where I got the most bored, now that I'm thinking about it, are the scenes with Asa Butterfield and Chris O'Dowd, just because he's such a, like, a cartoon version of a non-believing father, and has just no real reason to behaving the way he does. I mean, he just makes no effort to understand his son at any moment in the movie.
Yeah, and the plot and what's her face
as his mother? Like, what a wasted
Kim Dickens.
Kim Dickens, yes.
There's Kim Dickens is in this, Rupert Everett is in this, Allison Janney, Chris O'Dowd, Terrence Stamp, and Judy goddamn Dench. And it's they are so underused. It's fucking criminal.
Well, you kind of see why they signed on. They're like, sure, I'll show up. I'll get a paycheck. This is going to be so easy. I'll knock it out before lunch.
Well, Angie and I got really excited when we sat down to watch the movie, because we saw all these names coming up and we're literally going like, ooh, ah, like, yes, maybe this isn't going to be bad, because the trailers did nothing for me. And then to watch the movie, you were just like, what are we doing here? Like, you have this amazing talent. What did Judi Dench get to do? She got to be in one scene going like, hoo, and that was it. Like, what are we doing? It's so upsetting. It's maddening. It's maddening. And like, as someone who grew up watching Tim Burton movies and grew up with him as one of my all-time favorite filmmakers from like the ages of like 0 to like 14, this actually makes me angry, because used to do such incredible things, and now this is all I get, some watered down nonsense that's like playing like Junior Twilight or like Kindergarten American Horror Story. Like, it makes me mad.
All right, Christy, I see what you're saying, but like, Dark Shadows was how many years ago? Like, I feel like you should be used to disappointment as a Tim Burton fan by now, frankly.
Him and Donnie Depp are just setting out to set the movies I loved in my youth on fire.
Yeah. So we should wrap up. So in conclusion, Christy, 2 thumbs up, right?
I can't see any reason to go see this movie in theaters. If it's on TBS and you're like sort of stoned or like half asleep, fine.
Barry?
Yeah, clearly I don't feel that way. I'll fully admit this movie has problems. And I think one of the biggest problems with the movie is that it's just too big of an idea, and there's too many characters to squeeze them all into one movie. So I think it would have served the story much better to have maybe narrowed the focus and, you know, kind of structured a franchise format a little better and just started smaller. But for the most part, I had fun and I was entertained and I would happily watch this again.
I'm somewhere sort of in between. Like, Christy, I don't really see a good reason to watch this movie, much less in theaters. But like Perry, I have to admit, like, there are things about it that work. There are some of the ingredients of a good movie in here. It just makes me disappointed that they couldn't find a better way to put them together.
All right. And with that is a wrap on episode 133 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You guys know what to do. Please go on over to iTunes, where you can subscribe, comment, and rate. That would be super nice if you did that. Then go on over to Facebook and like us. We are also on Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. And then all three of us are all over the internet as well. Christy, can you take it first?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko. That's KRISTYPUCHKO. And I write all over the interwebs. You can get my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com. And this weekend, look for tweets, because I'm going to be at the Louisiana Film Prize, which is a really great short film festival you should check out if you are at all interested in making movies.
Angie?
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
And you can catch my writing on Collider.com, my face on the Collider Videos YouTube channel, Twitter and Instagram at PNemiroff. And with that, thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, you turn into a bird.
Well, I do. Yes. But that's not very useful.